There are 39 milahot, which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 High FM.
What a 1.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Parshas Vayera. Tov Shin Pei Vav. Erev Shabbos Project of this year. Baruch Hashem. Many, many Yidden are going to be keeping Shabbos this year, turning off their devices and feeling, sometimes for the first time, the joy, the radiance, the brightness, the beauty of a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos. Ashrecham Yisrael, what a wonderful nation we are. And a warm, warm welcome to all of you for joining us on this memorable Erev Shabbos afternoon to share some Torah, to prepare for a beautiful, inspiring, and uplifting Shabbos. As we always do, the show is brought to you by as a Refuah Shleima for many, many Cholim, amongst them Ariel ben Shenaleah, Yosef Geshen ben Taiba, Avram Yankov ben Shtenasara, Zalman Yitzchak ben Fegalea, Shena Rochel Baslea, Daniela Bas Nechama, Shlomit Bas Levoira, Mor Bat Esther, Besoich Shor Korle Yisrael, all those who might need a little bit of extra Kissum HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who might need a bit of an extra push, who might be an extra, some scatter the Shmaya to make their lives sweeter, to make their lives better, to make their Shabbos much more complete. Bez Hashem, we should be zeichet in this chus, in the merit of the Torah we're going to learn, and the beautiful, beautiful Shabbos we are anticipating that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should send only brachas, yeshuas, nechamas, refuas to all those who might need them. So this week, of course, is Parshas Vayera. It is, of course, the Shabbos project. But rabbis also sometimes have a Yetzar. And I thought about, let's talk about Shabbos. But then I remembered an old explanation of the Chasam Sefer on this week's Parsha. And my evil inclination, my Yetzar, said, come, let's share that. We have never shared it before in all the years of the program. So let's share it this afternoon. Bez Hashem, it'll be something that will give all of us a chizuk as we go into this coming Shabbos. So in this week's Pasha, of course, Pasha's Vayera, we read about Avram Avinu's encounter with the three Malachim who was sent by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to visit him. And when he saw them, he ran, as difficult as it was for him, as much pain he was in, he ran with them, and he convinced them to come and stay with him and have a meal. And he says, "Ve'echof aslechem," and I'll fetch sort of a morsel of bread, "the sadu libchem," so that you can sustain yourselves, "v'achar tavoy," and then you can go on your way. Why? Because you went past your servant's way. And they agreed. And they said, "Vayomru kein taseh kasher dibarta." They said, "Yes, as you have said, we will do." So the Vayimaher Avram Oyel El Sarah. Avram hurried to the tent to Sarah. And he said, "Mari, hurry! Shalosh se'im kemach seilis, 3 saw of meal, fine flour, lushi vasiugos, knead and make cakes, make food for these 3 guests that they'll be able to eat." Now, concerning this psukim, we have learnt in the Gemara Mamatzia on Daf 87, Pei Zayin says. It says, k'siv kemach. It says, take fine flour. That's soilus. And then it says soilus, that says kemach. It says that fine flour, And there's a kemach, which is like meal. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yitzchak says, Mikan, we know from here, Sha'isha tzara einea ba'orchim yoyse me'ish. We learn from here that a woman is stingier than a man towards guests. And Rashi explains that Sarah instructed to give the guests kemach, which is sort of coarse flour, referred to as meal. But Avram instructed to give them seiles, which is fine flour that has been sort of sifted thoroughly. Seemingly, this suggests that Sarah was stingier concerning the guests, since she did not wish to prepare them cakes from fine flour, seiles, but rather from the meal from the kemach. And this, of course, is very, very surprising. And we're going to come back and discuss it right after the break. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. Please stay with us. We're really just starting.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Vayera, Tov Shin Peivav, Erev the Shabbos Project, the most amazing, amazing Shabbos with so many Yin Bez Hashem are going to be involving themselves, are going to be imbibing themselves the Kedusha of Shabbos. But we're talking about Avram and Sarah seemingly fighting about whether to serve their guests fine flour, seiles, or meal. And it seems that Sarah preferred to give them the more coarse flour, while Avram insisted on the finer flour. And this is really, really surprising in light of the fact that we found last week's Pasha, Hashem actually instructs Avram Avinu, Kol Asher Taimar Elecha Sarah Shema B'Kola, whatever Sarah tells you, you must listen to your voice. And Rashi says, that what do you mean to her voice? B'Kol Ruach HaKodesh Sheba, to the divine spirit that rests in her. Love Madnu, Shoya Avram, Tofel, Sarah, Bidavius, which teaches us that Avram was not as great as Sarah in prophecy. If so, how do we even imagine that Sarah was being sort of stingy and didn't wish to entertain the guests as graciously as Avram did? Furthermore, the Midrash Tanchuma teaches us that Avram, when he said his hesped, his eulogy on Sarah in next week's Pasha, so he quoted the famous Pesukim, but please God, going to sing tonight, Eishes Chayel Miyimtza, who can find a woman of valor? And the Midrash clarifies the Pesukim as follows. Says Yodeo Shilchova Kisha, right? That she said she provided food for those who passed by and was charitable and clothed those that were in need. So we see, in fact, that Avram praised Sarah for the gracious manner in which she welcomed guests. So how is it possible to describe her as being stingy towards guests? It's also worth noting, Chazal actually says in the Medrash, says by before the Matan Torah, before giving the Torah, Moshe Allah l'Elokim, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim, and I'll just paraphrase the Medrash. The Medrash says that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to receive the Torah, so the Malachim, the angels of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wanted to stop Moshe from being able to receive the Torah. So what did Hashem do? Hashem turned Moshe's appearance to look like the face of Avram Avinu. And Hashem said to them, aren't you embarrassed in front of him? Isn't this the person who you went down to him and ate in his tent? And I was in the merit of the gracious manner in which Avram welcomed the three Malachim, his three heavenly visitors, Hashem silenced the Malachim's accusations against Klal Yisrael at the time of Matan Torah. Therefore, we really have to clarify, A, what is the impact of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rebuke to the Malachim? Aren't you embarrassed? You went down and had a meal in his house? What does that have to do with anything? Right? Why would the fact that they had a meal by Avraham Avinu, why would that compel them to forego their intense desire to actually receive the Torah? Secondly, why did the Malachim wish to harm Moshe Rabbeinu when he ascended to Shemayim, to the heavens, to receive the Torah? They must have known that he only did so at HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command. So why would they dare harm the King of Kings, loyal sort of agent? So let's begin with the incredible insight of our great, great teacher, the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer interprets this whole argument, this dispute between Avram and Sarah as to whether to serve the guests bread baked from refined flour or from meal, as a practical and philosophical debate concerning the ideal method of relaying Torah knowledge. In the drushes of Chasam Sofer, he writes as follows. Says, the whole matter of Avraham Avinu welcoming guests so can be viewed on two levels. First of all, he provided them with physical nutrition. In the context, kemach sailas simply refers to meal and fine flour. However, secondly, he nourished them spiritually by enlightening his guests in the ways of Hashem. Now, the Gemara in Nedarim on page Lamaches 38 teaches us that Hashem only gave the gift of Pilpul HaTorah, which is, I guess, the best way to translate it is Torah dialectics, to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu graciously shared this gift with all of the Jewish nation. Let's try for a moment and understand this debate, as it sort of were, between Hashem and Moshe, as to whether they give the valuable tool of pilpul. Pilpul means the deep, deep analytical study back and forth of Torah to the Jewish nation or not. Concerning this issue, Chasam Sofer explains that Hashem wished to give Yisrael the Torah in a very, very precise, refined, and unambiguous type of form. And he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give Israel, give the Jewish nation what we call halacha berura, thoroughly refined laws and lessons, not requiring involved sort of debates and discussions. No, not what we call, not needing pilpul in order to arrive at the truth of the matter. On the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Hashalom wanted Yisrael to have the merit of the mitzvah of toiling and laboring to refine the laws and the lessons. In this manner, they would not remain sort of stagnant, but rather would sort of steadily rise spiritually. In truth, the benefit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intent not to give Yisrael the power of analytics, of pilpul, but only clear halacha. So it's very, very clear, because the risk of introducing human error and sort of incorrect interpretations of Torah law is you avoid that problem totally. This, in fact, is a dispute that Avraham Avinu was having with Sarah, whose prophetic powers were actually greater than his. He wanted to present the guests with Silas, the thoroughly refined halachic conclusion without teaching them the methodology necessary to arrive at the said conclusion. Sarah, on the other hand, wished to present them with kemach, meal, and to teach them how to refine the flour to achieve the desired final product. At first glance, her actions could be misinterpreted as representing stinginess. However, the Pasuk in Mishlei in the famous of Lamed Aleph praises her and teaches us otherwise. She foresaw that it was best to teach them how to rise from one spiritual level to the next. We see from the Chasam Sefer that this whole debate, as it were, between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu at the time of Matan Torah is the very same debate that we find here going on between Avraham Avinu and Sarai Imenu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give Yisrael what he called Halacha Barura without needing to go back and forth and deep and analyze why, what, where. Get it just clear in order to avoid the introduction of human error and incorrect interpretation into the realm of Torah study. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu felt that people, the analytics, delving into Torah issues, sort of analytically, was actually essential for a Jew. We're going to come back and flesh this out a little bit more after the break, but we're going to go do our business first. It's 101.9, Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul on Erev Shabbos, and of course, Erev Shabbos Project. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. We are back on the radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Vayera, Tov Shin Pei Vov. And we are discussing a heated or discussion between Avraham Avinu and Sarah, what to serve the guests, whether it should be fine flour, seilas, or sort of regular meal. And we parallel that with a discussion that seemed to take place between Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem at the time of Matan Torah, of the giving of the Torah. And we explained, based on the Chasam Sefer, that we're dealing with here not just a discussion about flour, but about what type of Torah, what would be the best methodology in teaching Torah to the Jewish nation. Should we sort of lay it out clearly in sort of a point-by-point halacha form so that no effort is needed and there can be absolute clarity in the presentation so that what needs to be said is fully and completely understood? Or do we want people to have to work at it, to have to analyze it, to have to struggle, to have to work hard, to try to reach a conclusion, but there's always the chance and always the possibility that they might get it wrong? So we said that Avraham Avinu was actually a proponent of Hashem's methodology to present Yisrael with what we called halacha berura, clear, right? Remembering, resembling kind of very, very, very silas, which is like the silas, the sort of the finely sifted flour. Sarah, on the other hand, she shared Moshe Rabbeinu's view that it was preferable to present Yisrael with kemach, the unrefined halacha, necessitating, right, really to work hard, to put effort into analyzing and sort of dissecting the Torah in order to achieve the true meaning of the Torah. In the end, Sarah Imenu prevails. Actually, the guests are given a Torah in the form of kemach, right? Meal, sort of unrefined flour. For it's apparent from the Chasam Sefer's commentary that Moshe Rabbeinu also determined that this methodology was preferable, as illustrated by his decision to share the power of Pilpul HaTorah, of the analysis of Torah with the Jewish nation, a decision to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually acquiesced. Furthermore, even Avraham Avinu, in his hesped, in his eulogy of Sarah, praises her for her choice of this methodology. As he proclaims in the hesped, he says, "Tzefia halichay spesa, b'lechem atzlas leisaychel." Right? She anticipates the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of laziness. Additionally, the Torah actually testifies to the fact that Avraham Avinu was himself a prophet, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avimelech later in the Pasha, says, "Ata, and now Hoshev Esashis," after Avimelech had kidnapped Sarah and taken her to the palace, Hashem commanded him, "Now return this man's wife." Why? Ki Navihu, because he is a prophet. So Avram surely foresaw that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would instruct him, "Kol asher tamar elecha Sarah shema b'kala." Whatever Sarah tells you, you must follow. Right? As we have learned, he was actually inferior to Sarah as a prophet. So he accepted her opinion, even at this time, to present the guests with Torah in the form of Kemach. And it was forcing them to utilize the power of Pilpul, the power of their mind, the power of analysis, to refine the lessons that they would learn from the Torah. Now, before going on, we have to actually address one sort of very obvious question. How is it possible that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose not to give Yisrael the gift of analysis? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to lay it all out in front of us and make it absolutely clear? Yet Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, defied HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will and gave Yisrael the power of Pilpul, of analysis anyway. So in reality, the answer to this question is quite clear. From the very, very onset, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Moshe Rabbeinu, right, who was Yisrael's, of course, trustworthy shepherd, to be the one to make this decision, right? Whether or not to bestow this very, very essential part of Torah upon the Jewish nation. It was up to Moshe Rabbeinu to determine that this was indeed Hashem's will. And in the final analysis, we see that the decision was made in accordance with the opinions of Sarah Imenu and Moshe Rabbeinu. They held that it is preferable to deliver the Torah to Yisrael in the form of Kemach, sort of an unrefined, somewhat ambiguous halacha, to ensure that Yisrael would toil in their Torah study, employing all the analysis and the dialectics and in-depth analysis to refine the halacha into fine flour, into silas. Now, the reason that this method of Torah study is essential is suggested by the following Gemara. Gemara in Brachas towards the end on Samach Gimel and Beis 63b. The Gemara asks, "Minayin she'en divrei Torah miskaimen ela b'misha meimis atzma yaleha?" Says, from where do we know that words of Torah are not retained except by one who, so to speak, and the little translation, who kills himself over the Torah, not literally, because it says in the Pasuk in Bamidbar 19, "Zoi satayra," this is the Torah, "Adam ki yomus boil," of a man who dies in a tent. The Taz, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, explains the matter as follows. He says, in order for a Jew to retain the Torah that he has learned, right? And for it to become sort of a part of him, he must sort of figuratively kill himself on its behalf. In other words, he must adopt an intense methodology of learning characterized by real analysis. In fact, Rashi comments that those who do not labor in their Torah study, but rather sort of learn in a kind of leisurely fashion, are not going to be able to retain the Torah they learn. How beautifully this coincides with the concept we have from the great Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in the third chapter of Pirkei Avos. He says, "Im ein kemach, ein Torah." If there's no kemach, then there's no Torah. And im ein Torah, if there is no Torah, then there's no kemach. In other words, he's teaching us a very, very important lesson. If one does not toil and extend oneself in one's Torah study, one will not acquire Torah knowledge. It's necessary to engage in Torah study in the form of kemach, delving into each halacha in depth and clarifying even the sort of minutest details in order to achieve a true understanding of the subject. If you received the sort of the material already refined, all chewed up, all ready to use, right? And all prepared in the form of seiles, fine flour, without laboring and exerting oneself, then ein Torah. One will fail to actually acquire what the Torah has to offer. For we have actually learned, right? Ein divrei Torah miskayim el b'mishamei masatzman. The words of Torah cannot be retained except by one who kills himself over it. Conversely, we can deduce that im ein Torah, if one realizes that he has sort of failed to retain the Torah that he has learned, that he can't remember a thing, that is an indication that ein kemach, that he didn't really expend sufficient effort in his studies. He really didn't work hard enough to refine that undeveloped flour and make it into solace, into fine flour. Based on this, perhaps we can actually go one step further and maybe find an interpretation of the whole conversation that took place between Avram and the Malachim, where it says, "Vayomer lov," Malachim say to him, "Ayei Sarah ishtecha." They asked him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" "Vayomer," he answered, "Hineva oyel." She's here in the tent. Now, what prompted the Malachim to inquire as to Sarah's whereabouts? Our Chazal addressed this issue in the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Well, the Gemara says, of course they knew. The Malchei Hashoras, of course, knew that Sarah was in the tent. But they contrived to get this response in the tent in order to endear her to her husband. Now, based on what we've already established, right, so far, we can suggest that the Malachim were aware of this discussion going on between Avram and Sarah, whether to present the guests with Torah in the form of seiles or Torah in the form of kemach, unrefined. Upon seeing that Avram had conceded and had actually prepared for them bread made of kemach, so they asked him, "Ayeh Sarah ishtecha?" Where is Sarah, your wife? In other words, they were not actually asking as to her sort of physical whereabouts, but rather wanted to understand her reasoning. "Ayeh Sarah ishtecha?" Why does she believe that it's preferable to serve her guests Torah in the form of kemach rather than serving them seiros, halacha berura, right? Unambiguous, precise sort of Torah. Avram's response, hinei bo'eho, alludes to the concept of Adam ki yomus bo'eho. Sarah chose to serve kemach to ensure that Yisrael would figuratively kill themselves in order to acquire Torah. They would struggle and labor tirelessly in Ba'al Shel Torah, in the tent of Torah, to refine and purify the Kemach in order to produce clean, pure Seilas. And perhaps we could even embellish the idea with a small addition. If you take the numerical value, the gematria, of the two Hebrew words, kemach and seiles, as they appear in the Torah, in other words, seiles, just with three letters, samach, lamed, tav, right? So it's kemach is 148, and seiles is 490 equals 638, which equals the gematria of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Right? If you can work it out. Avram is 248, Yitzchak is 208, and Yaakov is 182. Put it all together, and you'll see it equals 638. This sort of gematria alludes to the fact that all three of the others agreed to this methodology and adopted it for all of the future generations. Sort of continuing along this path, so let's kind of, arise to the occasion and reconcile the commentary of the Chasam Sofer, which we said above. Right? We said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give Yisrael halacha brura, thoroughly refined laws and lessons, not requiring the individual to sort of have debates and discussions, pilpul, in order to sort of arrive at the truth of the matter. In truth, the benefit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intent not to give Yisrael the power of pilpul, but only to give it to him halacha brura, is very, very clear. Because the risk of introducing human mistakes, human error, and incorrect interpretation of Torah, right, by giving it to him clearly, that is avoided. They'll definitely get the clear shot in the Gemara. So this raises an obvious question. In the final analysis, Moshe Rabbeinu determines, along with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blessings, to give the power of Torah B'Iyun, of Pilpul, to Yisrael, so that they would labor over the Torah in the form of Kemach, right? Sort of sophisticated flour, in order to clarify the halacha and arrive at the truth of the matter in the form of Seilas, to make it into fine flour. So how then do we avoid the possibility that Chas v'Shalom shelo yisara bo sheker ayidei svaras enoshes? How do we arrive at the problem? It's a huge danger that sort of false interpretations, Chas v'Shalom, will not be introduced into halacha due to errors of human logic. So to resolve this issue, so let's actually introduce a phrase from Tehillim, from my Dovid HaMelech's Tehillim in capital Pei Hei, where it says, "Emes me'eretz titzmach," truth will sprout from the earth. What does it mean that truth will sprout from the earth? So let's suggest an interpretation. When a person plants a seed in the ground in order to grow grain or fruit, so he must first plow the soil and water it, then he You must clear the land of all the thorns and debris, and only then will the earth give forth healthy produce worthy of consumption. Similarly, right, it is actually impossible for a sort of a mere physical person of flesh and blood to actually ascertain the truth of a matter without first laboring and sort of almost evaluating all the aspects of the subject. Along the way, he is sure to make several sort of logical mistakes until HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately enlightens him to arrive at the truth. This process is reflected by the Gemara in Gittin on Daf 43 elucidates the Pasuk in Yeshayah, the Pasuk says, V'hamichshala hazais tachas yodecha. Says, literally, and this stumbling block is under your hands. And the Gemara says, here the Torah is referring to as a stumbling block, because a person does not achieve a true understanding of a Torah-related issue without first stumbling several times in its interpretation. So this then is exactly the meaning of the phrase, Emes me eretz titzmach. The truth of the matter will only be revealed by following a process similar to growing produce from the earth. All of the thorns, which are sort of the errors in reasoning and logic, must first be eliminated. We find, therefore, that all of the ideas and sort of theories entertained along the way before arriving at the actual truth of the matter, right, although many of them actually were invalid, are nevertheless, right, a kind of an inseparable part of the actual process of learning and part of the final conclusion. Without them, the truth of the matter would never have been actually ascertained. So it's now much clearer why Moshe Rabbeinu elected to give over the gift of pupil, of analysis, of deep study to the Jewish nation. He intended for them to clarify the truth of halachic matters by laboring in their Torah studies, despite the false interpretations and logical sort of errors that were likely to arise. He understood that the correct interpretations, right, were unachievable without these sort of snags along the way. As such, they were all an integral part of the ultimate truth. This is 101.9 Chai FM program of Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Parshas Vayera Tov Shin Pei Vav, the Shabbos of the Great Shabbos Project, which has finally arrived, Baruch Hashem, and we're all getting geared up to keep Shabbos this week. Those of us who keep Shabbos every week, so of course, we'll enhance it, we'll do something special, we'll have a special Kiddush, we'll have a special Shir, we'll talk about the Kedusha, about the beauty of Shabbos. But we are talking here about lifts. So he brought three different opinions, whether you can or can't use a lift on Shabbos. So the truth is, the lenient position, the one that you can actually go up and down in a lift as long as it's preset, is actually the primary one, while those who are strict, so of course, it's the right thing to be strict also. In a case of needs, so then even those who are normally strict are allowed to be lenient. You know, the person's ill, you know, hospital, the old age home. But obviously, where the only way people can get up and down is by with a lift. So then to go down to a meal, to go down to davening, that would certainly be allowed for those people. Those who are lenient have to be careful either not to enter or exit the Shabbos lift when the door is about to close, so as not to avoid causing it to reopen. Right? And even for those who are lenient, it's still better if the automatic system is programmed under the supervision of an organization that actually specializes in halacha and technology. So, because this can help sort of ensure that entering the lift does not actually turn on a light or the like, and minimize the prohibitions involved according to the stricter view who would not use it anyway. So that's in terms of lifts. Bez Hashem, next week we'll talk a little bit about using sort of electricity that was actually produced perhaps on Shabbos itself. Well, anyway, this is about all the time we have. We need to go and run off and get our Shabbos ready and get our house ready for the guests and, of course, for the Shabbos Malkus of the Queen Shabbos, who always comes to our house every single Shabbos of the year and always looks to see, are we doing right? Are we keeping Shabbos? Are we getting ready? Are we doing things to the best possible way? That's, of course, what we want to do. And we're just going to wish that this Shabbos be the most amazing Shabbos for all of us. A Shabbos of Menucha, a Shabbos of rest, a Shabbos of Kedusha, of feeling the holiness of Shabbos, of feeling the family, of feeling the closeness we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I'm just going to take leave of you and wish every single one of you, first of all, thank you so much for being with us, for listening, for being part of our radio family, and to wish every single person should have a beautiful, beautiful Shabbos. And all together, let's share and have a Shabbos Mavoyrach, a beautiful, beautiful good Shabbos to one and to all. Kol Tov.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kiddush, Pashas Vayera, Tovshin Peivav. This is the week of the Shabbos Project. And that's why this show is so tuned into that. Because every week we have a slot where we deal with Hilchos Shabbos. We've done Baruch Hashem quite a lot, but still so much more to get through, so much more to learn in terms of the Malachas. And then, of course, once you finish, you have to start all over again because you have to keep on revising, you have to keep on learning, you have to keep on knowing. Otherwise, you can never, ever be totally and completely proficient and remember it all. As we always do at this point on the program, just to share with you the important times and details you need for this coming Shabbos. So this afternoon, Erev Shabbos, Kodesh Pashas Vayera, the earliest time to light your Shabbos candles is at 5:06. 5:06, you can already get those candles burning. This Shabbos project not only wants us to turn off our devices, but to love Shabbos, to accept Shabbos, and if we can, to add even more extra time onto Shabbos than is actually budgeted. If you can get another few minutes or another hour, that is so fantastic. If you can get our candles lit by 5:06, and then you have an hour to sit down and chill, sit down with a book, sit down with some nice material you want to read, sit down with your kids, sit down with your spouse, and spend the time together. Shabbos can be ready. It's easy. It's possible to have Shabbos ready by 5 o'clock. You know, there are people that basically have Shabbos ready by lunchtime on Friday, and then they can really sit down and ease their way into Shabbos. It's an amazing thing. If you haven't done it, you'll think it's impossible. Can't possibly do it. But once you get your mind around it and work out how you're going to do it and plan yourself and sort of schedule how it is possible to do it, it is the most, it's a transformation of your entire life. So anyway, the earliest time for lift benching this afternoon is at 5:06. And obviously, you can't do it then. 5:10, 5:20, 5:30, whatever. Any time early is great. The latest time for benching licht this afternoon is going to be 6:11. 6:11 is the absolute deadline for lighting your candles. And again, as we always say, that has to be looked at as that is the absolute latest time we can go. Yes, there are 18 minutes until sunset, which is at 6:29. But again, that is always just for timeout, for injury timeout. That is for emergencies where a person, God forbid, might break Shabbos if you didn't have that extra bit of time. But as far as we're concerned, 6:11 is the absolute deadline for when Shabbos begins, and everything's got to be in place. So we should be in place. We should be in shul already, getting ready to start this amazing Shabbos of the Shabbos project. Therefore, as you said, sunset is 6:29, and therefore, the person wants to make sure he's davening Ma'ariv and saying the Kriya Shema after night. All he has to do is wait until 6:47. 6:47 is already night. And you can daven Ma'ariv, you can say your Kriya Shema, and come home to an amazing Friday night of the Shabbos project. If you're having supper at home, hopefully with some guests, right? To be that kind of a super host, even if you can't manage 10 guests, about a few people, and sort of let them in on the amazing secret, on the amazing beauty of what Shabbos is all about. What an opportunity, what a privilege we have to be able to have Shabbos for ourselves and Be'ezus Hashem share it with other people. It is such a blessing, and it can literally transform and change lives around. Tomorrow, of course, is Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Vayera. Got a long parsha, lots and lots going on, from Avraham Avinu with the guest, and then Sodom, and then Yitzchak being born, and finally the Akedat Yitzchak, which we've discussed in previous years on the show, and then the Haftarah that goes along with it, the Haftarah of the story of Elisha, how Elisha resurrects a child, and before that he gives this woman, right, he resurrects a child and helps this other woman who is indigent, does a miracle for her so she can provide for her two children and get out of debt. Amazing, a beautiful Haftarah. And Shabbos carries on. Shabbos is definitely getting longer. Shabbos tomorrow night will end at 7:03, 3 minutes after 7. We've already gotten past the 7 o'clock hurdle on our way to the really, really long Shabbosos. And make this an amazing Shabbos. Whatever your shul is doing in terms of shiurim or meals or brachas or whatever it is, make it a really, really unique and special Shabbos for yourself. We are dealing with the laws of electricity and appliances, and we'll talk for a moment about lifts on Shabbos. So one may not operate a lift on Shabbos, because obviously pressing the lift button that involves literally a Torah obligation, or at least some cases a rabbinic prohibition. However, there is such a concept as a Shabbos lift, and those are set to operate sort of automatically, meaning that they are set before Shabbos to stop on every single floor, right, or every other floor, right, at which point the doors open on their own for a sort of predetermined amount of time, and then close on their own. And then the lift then continues on its way to its next stop. Now, there's a whole difference of opinion amongst the poskim whether or not one is allowed to use these types of lifts. Some poskim prohibit the use of a Shabbos lift, and they hold that using it is literally a weekday activity. And additionally, entering the lift. So it causes its motor to actually use more electricity when the lift goes up and down. That's the Chilkas Yaakov who says that. And I think Weiss and Minchas Yitzchak also agrees that, that is a problem, that we add extra weight into it. However, others hold that one may go up in a Shabbos lift, but not down. Up, but not down. And that's because when the lift goes down, the extra weight helps produce electricity. So therefore, one who rides the lift has a hand, so to speak, in generating electricity. Right? That is some hold that way. There is a third opinion, of course, which maintains that a Shabbos lift may be used. Why? Since the settings are in place before Shabbos and no action needs to be taken on Shabbos to make the lift work, there's no prohibition. The fact that the lift has a system that determines the weight of the passenger, which in turn tells the motor how much power to use, and even makes use of the additional weight to produce sort of electricity, is of absolutely no interest at all to the rider. As long as the lift goes up and down according to its settings, the passenger does not care about the lift's electricity sort of conserving mechanisms. Therefore, the actions caused indirectly by his entry into the lift are not actually at all, so even attributable to him at all. Now, it is its truth is it's actually a psik ratio. There is inevitable malacha taking place, but it's deloy nichalei. I don't care about it, and it's a grammar. So this is the opinion actually of Henkin and of Unterman and of Shlomo Zalman Neubach also says it. Okay, we're going to come back with some last words and comments on this subject. Please God, after the break. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul, and this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.